say a bet is a bet, and I think, regardless, I won this bet. Yes, indeed. I certainly did. First of all, good morning. Welcome to the first meeting in February of the Board of Public Works. I think this is going to be a real short meeting. I don't know how many of you had an opportunity to either attend or certainly see on television the parade for our Super Bowl champions and heroes, Baltimore Ravens. It was quite a electrifying moment for the state, for the city of Baltimore. We're all proud of what they accomplished this season, and certainly proud of the 17 years of inspiration that Ray Lewis has provided. As you can see, my favorite actually is Ray Rice. I like standing next to Ray Rice. He's a lot shorter than I am, but he's about three times wider. I also want to comment that what I really appreciate most about the Ravens, and I think maybe the Treasurer and the Comptroller have a similar experience, but as both an organization and individuals on the team, they are extraordinary citizens, philanthropic, charitable, and generous. We've done a number of things with many of the members, whether on, you know, driver safety or cancer awareness, and just a number of causes that they take up and that they promote and they support. So I certainly salute them and Coach Harbaugh and the ownership of the Ravens. So I'm excited to sit here today. I am, as I always say, I'm neither Martin O'Malley nor Ray Lewis. I'm your Lieutenant Governor, and is proud to be here to preside over the Board of Public Works. Madam Treasurer?
Just one thing of pertinence. The Ravens are partners of our college savings program, as you know, and they have gone out and helped us sell it. We've got a great poster with all the guys with their school T-shirts on, and or whatever the shirts are they have. And they've been terrific, and they've helped really raise the awareness out in the community among young people and their parents about the importance of college savings. I also will say, I don't know if the comptroller would want me to, but he and I were among those few from Montgomery County some years ago who supported the building of what is now the Ravens Stadium. Mm-hmm. And we're very glad to see what came of that.
Absolutely. I love the purple.
Yeah.
And but I was just sitting here thinking that the sales tax on this wonderful Ray Rice jersey is much appreciated.
It's not cheap, I can tell you that much.
What I'm really looking forward to is Joe Flacco's new contract. That definitely will be good for revenues in the state. And obviously, everybody's delighted, and the ownership of the Ravens are so impressive. Mr. Bisciotti is someone that carries himself with great dignity, and our coach, Harbaugh, our coach is so impressive, and of course, Joe Flacco with his MVP performance. It's just spectacular, and what a fitting end to Ray Lewis's tremendous career as the greatest linebacker in history. And I did, as I was watching the parade yesterday, Lieutenant Governor, thank you for running the meeting here. I love having you here. It's a great opportunity for the state to see your talents. But I was watching that parade yesterday, and I thought of Art Modell looking down from up above. And obviously he had a big smile on his face. And just a great way to cap the season yesterday, Baltimore stood tall, the state of Maryland stood tall and made us all proud. I will say that now the NFL season's over, and I'm actually turning my attention to the baseball season. And although I was not completely right about football, I predicted a Ravens-Redskins Super Bowl. I was half right. And now we've got spring training coming, and I just want to make sure that we don't get too distracted from what, frankly, the Treasurer alluded to, which is our great college sports programs. These are, obviously, there's a lot of high profile with the Super Bowl and with the March Madness basketball championships that are going to happen. But I'm actually much more interested in just the tremendous other sports at our colleges that don't get so much attention. We have college lacrosse teams that are nationally ranked in both the women's program and the men's program. We have strong baseball teams like Salisbury and Hopkins that are nationally ranked. I always try to stop by at Towson or Coppin State and catch a game from time to time because it's such a pleasure to sit with faculty and students and family and administration and, you know, think of the wonderful track and tennis and softball teams that are starting their seasons. And, of course, I have yet to get to one of them, but I promise that I will attend the next University of Maryland Baltimore County chess team match. I'm not sure whether spectators are allowed, but I'm going to go and bring a book and root for them because they're, frankly, almost number one in the country. It's a great time, spring, to enjoy the beauty and to root for student-athletes. It's a great time for families to bring their kids to our lovely events. It's a great time to enjoy sporting events that are incredibly affordable, i.e. free, and help boost school spirit, unite local communities, bring well-deserved attention to our world-class higher education students. Obviously, the collegiate sports support a tremendous amount of jobs, important revenue for universities, their surrounding communities. So please take an opportunity this spring. Encourage your folks to get out and support our local collegiate teams. And, Lieutenant Governor, take it from me, the lights in those stadiums do not go out in the middle of the game. But pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
You know, let me just add, I was looking at the Comptroller's a predecessor on the wall there, actually, when he was governor. We probably wouldn't have either the Orioles nor the Ravens without Governor Schaefer. And I think he must have a little smile behind that perpetual.
Well, I've mentioned this before, that in Montgomery County, the treasurer is right, there are only a few of us that voted for the stadium, and there were all sorts of people picketing my house with signs saying schools, not stadiums. You know, valid point of disagreement. But I've noticed over the years a number of them now come and ask me for Ravens tickets. And so all is forgiven.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Again, welcome, everyone. Why don't we go ahead and turn to the Secretary's agenda, and as we do, if we can start with item number 14. I know we have some members of the community that are like to address the Board of Public Works on that item, Reverend Hathaway, who is from Union Baptist Church in Baltimore, and as well as Reverend Anna Mosby from the Mount Gilboa AME Church in Baltimore County. So can we start with that?
Mr. Mack is here.
Mr. Mack is here as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. Good morning, Comptroller Franchot. Good morning.
Good morning to you,
and here we go again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure again.
We have two dynamite projects that we would like to present today, the historic Union Baptist Church of Baltimore and Mount Gilboa of Baltimore County. And I have with me today the pastor of the church who will make this presentation for Union.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a beautiful day. It's good to see you. We're distinctly honored to come on this day. Good morning, Honorable Madam Secretary, Treasurer Kopp, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, Comptroller Peter Franchot. Good to see each of one of you. My name is, I have three of my members with me. I'm asking them what they stand. My name is Dr. Alvin Hathaway. I'm a senior pastor of Union Baptist Church of Baltimore. Accompanying me today is Ms. Evelyn Chapman. She's the chairperson of our Board of Trustees. Ms. Valerie Baxter, who's a member of our Board of Trustees. Ms. Carol Jones, who's our grant manager, but also is the cousin of Mr. Donald Murray, whose statue is located in Lawyers Mall. In 1999, Union Baptist Church established an archive and artifacts ministry. Their purpose is to recover, to store, to maintain print, photographic, graphic, visual, and audio historic artifacts of Union Baptist Church. Over the years, we have accumulated many valuable and significant artifacts. Some of that information was used to support our application to the National Park Service for designating our church as a National Historic Place. We received that designation in December 2011. The design of our structure by William J. Beardsley and the stained glass windows created by John LaFarge, coupled with the ministry efforts of Reverend Dr. Harvey Johnson, who served as our fifth pastor from 1874 to 1923, established Union Baptist Church as an early contributor to the civil rights movement. Our collection has grown to the point where we need a designated and renovated space within our campus to store, to protect, and to catalog our collection. We need workspace to preserve this collection and display space for visitors to see the collection. We've identified such space in this grant of $40,000, which we will match with cash and in-kind services, will allow us to develop archival quality space. Future generations, scholars, students, and the general public will benefit from the rich collection accumulated from our 161 years of service to the community, city, state, and nation. We request your support for our grant application. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now for Mark DeBoer, Reverend Moses.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to Lieutenant Governor Brown, to Comptroller Franchot, and to Treasurer Cott. It's a pleasure to be here this morning on behalf of our bishop, the Right Reverend William Phillips DeVoe, and also the officers and members of Mount Gilboa African Methodist Episcopal Church, where most of our members are Ravens fans. It is, I believe, fitting that we would stand here on this first week of African American History Month to come before you for this, to request this funding. Mount Gilboa AME Church is the oldest active African American church in Baltimore County. It does have a rich history. The structure is over 180 years old. It was built in 1830 by freed African-American residents of Maryland. It is the replacement of an earlier log cabin where Benjamin Banneker worshipped, and there is an adjacent cemetery as well. And everyone knows that Benjamin Banneker was the first African-American man of science and a son of Maryland. And so we're grateful for that. In 1977, Mount Gilboa was listed on the National Historic Registry. Additionally, as far as history goes, the lower level of the building was once used as a schoolhouse in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and the upper level, of course, a sanctuary. And the grandfather of one of those persons that attended that school is a member of our church. Most recently, we serve as a community of a house of worship and continue to uncover historic information. This project, we first of all thank you. Last year, you awarded $30,000 to begin the project of renovating the windows and restoring the windows. This grant would provide additional restoration and preservation as we move forward in ensuring that the building will remain not only an active house of worship, but a source for all members and all residents of the state of Maryland. It's an opportunity to ensure that our historic buildings and our history are alive and thrive for future generations. Far too often, our history is lost, and a sense of pride in the accomplishments of our forefathers and foremothers. And through this restoration project, the state residents and visitors will see Mount Gilboa not as an old building, but an example of the hard work, commitment, and tenacity of our Maryland ancestors. And for that, all of us can be proud. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any questions?
I'm glad to see this one continuing.
This is a wonderful. These are two wonderful examples of the impact that our church has had on our progress through.
In the midst of all of these fascinating issues that we have before us and all the numbers we have before us, it's very good to be able to, I think, to be able to put a human face on the projects and the things we see. And it's projects like these and their history and the coming together of everybody behind the projects that makes it real. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for coming down and sharing with us the projects and the use that the funds will go towards. On an unrelated note, I certainly want to thank Reverend Hathaway and your church family at Union Baptist for welcoming me to worship with the church and to present some information on foster care and adoption, what we're doing in the state, and how we can partner with your membership, your congregation, to place more children for adoption and in loving care and homes, foster homes. So thank you very much. I look forward to coming back to visit.
And anything you and your colleagues can do to help us with the College Savings Program, letting your folks know about it, it would be a great step forward.
We have one member on the board of that. I want to do commend you, Lieutenant Governor, for the Health Enterprise Zone. Mm-hmm. Tremendous help for our community.
Great. Okay, so thank you very much for coming down, and let's take up the remainder of the
Yes, we have agenda. A total of 14 items on the Secretary's agenda. That was item 14 we discussed. There are two reports of emergency procurements. We also have had a request from Delegate McMillan to address the board on item 10, which is the Annapolis Water Treatment Plant upgrade.
Okay. Welcome, Delegate McMillan. And why don't we have someone present item 10, and then we'll have...
Who's here on behalf of the Department of Environment?
Who will present item 10?
That's what I was...
Yes.
Annapolis Wastewater Treatment Plant. It's.
Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
This is Waleed Safouri. I'm the work with MDE Engineering Capital Projects Program, and the Annapolis Water Treatment Plant. It's a project. It's a design-build project that is going to be to replace the treatment plant because of the age. It has to be replaced. There's no. Violation, but it's only replacing the treatment plant to avoid anything like that from happening in the future. We have $28.5 million in Lincoln Water State Revolving Loan Fund and $1.5 million in loan forgiveness. Which is the maximum that any project can have under the program. Mainly, the purpose of the treatment plan is to remove iron and manganese from the water source.
Great. Well, okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions before we bring that down? Okay, thank you very much. Don't go far,
okay.
But come on up, Delegate McMillan, and look forward to hearing your comments on item 10.
Thank you, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Comptroller, and Treasurer Kopp. Again, this is for drinking water, and we take a great deal of pride in our water in Annapolis. It's received a lot of awards over the years, and I'm a pilot. I travel, and I can tell you we're one of the three best-tasting water places in the country, in my opinion. And we have, in Annapolis, in the city, we've seen our water bills go up by 100% in the last 2 years. And this grant is going to, in my view, go a long way towards helping us to upgrade our plant, but also, importantly, to reduce the water bills. I'll tell you candidly, for a lot of people, the water bill increase, for me, it was about $1,000 a year, and I've only got three people living in my home, and I don't usually shower there. I shower at the gym, so you can imagine how tough it is for families that have a lot of children in them. I really do want to thank the state for helping the city with this and urge your favorable consideration of it. We really do think it'll help the people who live in the city of Annapolis a great deal and allow them some relief from those water bills. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's great.
Any questions?
What are the other two cities?
Believe it or not, New York City, which gets its water from the Catskill Mountains, their water tastes great, in my opinion. And the third city, well, what is the third city? I would go with Portland, Oregon. They got great water, just in my opinion. But we're number one, just like the Ravens. Thank you very much.
That's great. Okay, any other questions or comments on item number 10? If not, let's turn to the remainder of the Secretary's agenda. Are there any questions or comments on any of the other items?
I would just point out number five is the authorization for the next bond sale. We will revisit this again over a couple of meetings, but the 2013 first series general obligation bond sale is scheduled for March 6th. It will be $500 million in competitively sold tax-exempt bonds, and then this authorizes up to 500. It probably will not be 500, but up to $500 million in refunding. And that, of course, depends on the market, what rates we can get and what rates we get back when we invest. Right now, it looks like maybe about $400 million, but it's much too early to tell. If it were $400 million, we would be saving the taxpayers $17 million, but it really is much too early to tell. So this just puts it on our schedule and puts it out there for the public to alert them that the sale is coming.
Okay, anything else? Thank you very much. So, it looks like a settlement date maybe in March?
Yeah.
And does that mean that
the sale will be at the board meeting March 6th. It's scheduled to be. Now, this is
about. We do that at your offices? Is that the one
we do that at the assembly room in the Treasury building because that's where we have the technology available. There will be a lot going on in Washington, we hope. Right around that time, there's going to be impact from a number of things. So we're still watching it, but right now we're putting it on the calendar. We assume we're going to go forward. We have every intention of doing it. It's our normal course of business, and we'll wait and see what's happening around March 5th or 6th.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much. Anything else?
Yes, I'm delighted the Treasurer brought that item up because we are being asked to authorize the sale of another, up to $1 billion, I guess, in state general obligation bonds.
Well, $500
plus the $400.
Yeah.
And I recognize, obviously, the importance of these capital priorities projects that the state will use these bond proceeds to initiate and complete, and I completely agree with the Treasurer on her able leadership of the program and as far as directing us to look at savings that the state might have from historically low interest rates. But I think a growing number of people are getting concerned with the practical implications of Maryland's mounting debt load. This is the downside as opposed to the upside. I don't want to turn this meeting into an impromptu session of the Capital Debt Affordability Committee that both the Treasurer and I serve on. But if I could, I'd like to just ask for the record two questions, one of the Treasurer's staff, perhaps, and another of Secretary Foster. First question is that I believe the State Commission on State Debt, which is so ably chaired by Treasurer Kopp, is scheduled to convene on sine die this year to approve the state's property tax rate for the year ahead.
Well,
no?
To decide on something to recommend to the Board of Public Works.
Recommend to the Board, right. This meeting could be more interesting than others in years past because of a growing concern that we will sooner or later have to raise property taxes, the revenues from which are used for debt service, in order to meet our payment obligations. This year, the governor set aside $100 million in general fund revenues to supplement property tax receipts. $100 million from the general fund to supplement the state property tax receipts. But the Department of Legislative Services has forecast that we will have to come up with an estimated $530 million transfer by the fiscal year 2018 to service our debt. Could be less, could be more, but it's a significant amount of money. So for those who are watching at home, our debt load is rising at a faster pace than our current ability to pay for it, which means that we will either have to raise property taxes, pull money from the general fund, which inhibits our ability to pay for other essential functions of government, or just hold a lot of fake sales, I guess, out there. For the record, and I guess, Madam Treasurer, it's either you or your staff, will this bond issue in front of us influence in any way our ability to preserve our current property tax rate of 11.2 cents per $100 of assessed value for the year ahead? And I ask this because, obviously, property tax increases, avoiding them, are absolutely vital for homeowners who are still struggling to hold on and make ends meet in what can only still be described as a slowly recovering economy. And,
I don't have all the numbers before me, but I would say that this sale at this point would not.
Thank you.
This sale, just to remind you, is to continue paying for things that were contracted for, and in fact, in terms of all the public schools, is actually to pay for things that were already built in some cases. So this is not the new projects. This is to pay for what we have already bought, essentially, which is mostly schools and college buildings with some correction facilities and health.
And I think there's lots of positive contributions. I'm just asking about the downside because of
The numbers you quote are the numbers that we, in fact, incorporated in tentative projections for the last several years, in fact, in the capital debt affordability reports. You are right. There will be a choice either to not build the schools, to increase the property tax back to where it was under Governor Ehrlich, or to use some other tax funds, general funds, as we also have in the past. We will pay our debt.
But I take it you do not see that happening at this upcoming Commission on State Debt meeting because of...
I really don't know. If the funds continue in the general fund, that is, if they're not taken out, we will actually presumably be getting some premium money, which means that they can be reduced, there would be no need to raise the property tax at this point. But that is 2 months from now.
Thank you. And I applaud your leadership, as I do all over the state. We're all grateful for that control that you have over these important financial issues. But my second question is for Secretary Foster, leading from what the Treasurer has said. What is your department's strategy for dealing with this growing gap between debt service obligations and revenues, assuming, as I feel, that the property tax increase is a non-starter, but not so much this year, but what about the future prediction by DLS, and in fiscal year 2018, we may be looking for $530 million from the general fund. Is there a, obviously maybe the housing market improves and we're all, not all of these problems just go away naturally, but I have to think that you have a realistic plan in your agency that anticipates something I would be consider unfortunate, which is a continuation of the sagging economy.
Well, first of all, I would say in terms of the $500 million, that is for fiscal year 2018, so we have five fiscal years for that number to be reduced. I would say it is an estimate, and if you look at the estimates that the Department of Legislative Services have done over the last several years, over that period, you know, they have estimated that we would that number would be in the $200 to $300 million range. And because of our revenues improving, those numbers have decreased. As the Treasurer, as you noted, we do include $100 million in this budget for debt service. As the Treasurer has indicated, if bond premium is sufficient, we may be able to reduce that number. I think bond premium over the last several years has ranged between $32 million to as much as $70 million. If it's at the highest level, that means that $100 million number is reduced to $30 million. So I would say, Mr. Comptroller, it is certainly something that we assess each year. It's something that we assess when we meet, when you, the Treasurer, and I meet as the members of the Capital Debt Affordability Committee. And I would just say certainly that the debt that we're issuing now is within the ranges and the ratios that have been approved by the bond rating agencies, and we will not be exceeding our limits.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Anything else? Any other discussion on this item? Thanks for raising it, and thanks for, yeah, for the questions. Anything else on the Secretary's agenda? Hearing none. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Secretary's agenda passes. Let's move on to our next agenda, which is the Department of Natural Resources Real Property. Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Emily Wilson with the Department of Natural Resources. We have 9 items on our agenda today. We are withdrawing item 1A. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
No, I'd just like to thank you for putting in the sentence about lighting efficiency and light pollution and all of these. It's helpful just to draw the attention. Thank you.
Any further discussion, comments, questions? Hearing none, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? None. That's been approved. Let's go to DBM's agenda. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 8 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
What is item 6? Let's see. Governor, I had a question on item 6.
Sure.
Okay. Item 6 is a request for a retroactive approval to increase the amount of funding that's available for temporary office help. We have Darren Acock, who is from the State Department of Assessments and Taxation.
Good morning, Mr. Acock.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. Good morning, Mr. Comptroller. Good morning, Madam Treasurer.
Tell us a little about item 6.
Item 6 basically is a temporary service contract that we have with various temp agencies. This contract originally started with about $375,000, $125,000 awarded to each contractor. One of the biggest problems that we've had is that in regards to meeting our MBE participation, one of the contractors had to withdraw, where the subcontractors had to withdraw because of the high unemployment insurance rate that was being charged. The state has been under Schedule F for probably the past 4 or 5 years. I have contacted my resource in the Department of Labor License and Regulations and found out that as of January 1, 2013, the schedule has now employers will be paying at the Schedule C level. So the department will be back in touch with one of the contractors to see if we can get the MBE participation back up for one of the subprime contractors.
And the difference between Schedule F and Schedule C is Schedule C is a lower rate?
That's correct.
Okay.
One of the other things I want to note with our other contractor, the department is above 40% in regards to the MBE participation. So it is something that, you know, we pay close attention to.
Yes, thank you. And I spent a lot of time telling folks that I'm not SDAT. I'm the comptroller's office. But would you please tell Director Young, who I have great respect for, give him my greetings, and I do have a question, I guess, that perhaps you can respond to. I'm going to support this request, obviously. He's an outstanding public servant, and there's a lot of pressure going on there. But how will this help SDAT respond to the inevitable backlog of homestead property tax credit applications that flooded into the agency prior to the December 31st deadline? I'd specifically like to know the extent to which this will diminish the wait times in the agency's call center, accelerate the processing of applications, and assure taxpayers that their applications have indeed been approved.
Okay. Well, the department's approaching this from two perspectives. One perspective is that We have, instead of pursuing contractual help through these contractors and knowing that we have the MBE participation goal that we're unable to achieve with this particular vendor, the department has requested contractual, state contractual employees. So we have made a request, submitted a hiring freeze exception, to recruit three state contractual employees. In addition to that, we have also requested two temp services employees in order to address that issue with the homestead tax credit applications. It is my understanding that there is a bill currently that's being submitted this year in order to extend that deadline. So the department is trying to take a strategic look at both maybe hiring more contractual employees in order to prevent having to come before the board again, requesting additional money for this contract. So, you know, we're trying to look at basically if we have long-term needs or whatever to pursue those through state contractual employees instead of through the temp service contract.
Excellent. And do you have a sense of the number and percentage of eligible property owners that failed to submit their application prior to last year's deadline? And could you share just for the moment the multitude of steps that I know your agency took to inform people of the pending deadline and to encourage them to apply early and to apply online?
The first part of your question, I would probably have to defer that to Mr. Young. I do not have that information with me at this time. Mm-hmm. However, I do know that the department did a lot of advertising through radio, through media, as far as trying to alert homeowners about what was required and notifying them of the deadline.
And do you have any impression as to what percentage of property owners filed paper applications or which percentage filed electronically?
No, I do not. I do not have that information.
Maybe you can send that back to us. But, you know, we get a lot of phone calls in our office. We handle 1.5 million phone calls about other tax issues. And I encourage my agency to be as responsive as possible because when you're put on call waiting and it stretches out for a considerable amount of time, your agency faced with this deadline, it's understandable, but it causes a tremendous frustration. And yesterday, Lieutenant Governor, the day before, I called my own comptroller's call center just as a test, and I was delighted that within 5 seconds someone picked the phone up. Maybe they knew it was me calling, but that's the kind of customer service that, boy, if we can avoid long waits on the phone,
yes,
very beneficial to the state's reputation.
Mr. Comptroller, one of the things I would like to say as far as that last day of the deadline, there was an extremely long line of customers and constituents trying to get into the 300 location. We actually took two or three of our staff and set up a separate location for anyone that was coming to apply for the home for the tax credit, so that we can kind of separate that population from other people that were visiting that location. So,
good for you. We spill over our calls to our branch offices when they number, which is a big help. And also, we toured, I think it was SNCCO the other day down in southern Maryland, and they have it's a utility. They have a call center which had some efficiencies and improvements to it that really caught my eye. So we're looking at them for our agency, and perhaps we'll send over what our best practices from them are for you guys to take a look at.
All right. Thank you so much. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Any other comments on this? Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Anything else on any other items on the DBM calendar?
Oh, right. I had one question. Seven. I'm sorry. Shut up after this.
Item 7 is a contract modification request to obtain some technical enhancements to implement the lottery's loyalty rewards program. And we have Robert Fontaine as the principal counsel for the department here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Uh-huh. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Mr. Comptroller.
Yes, the way I understand the program in your item is that the Maryland State Lottery is suggesting that we basically have a rewards program similar to frequent flyers that allows frequent lottery players to accumulate points that they can redeem for merchandise. My background notes indicate that this sort of program has been implemented successfully in three states, Arkansas, Iowa, and Tennessee, and it's pending in three more. I personally am not a huge fan of the products that are sold by the Maryland Lottery. I do respect the need to be nimble and to think innovatively in order to stay a step ahead of your competition. I just want to make sure that as we think newer and savvier ways to generate more revenue, we're also keeping in mind that many of your most reliable customers are undoubtedly living on the margins as it is and can't afford to fork over more cash at the convenience store. Given that this new program is designed more for high-volume players than for people like me who can just buy a single ticket on a whim from time to time, what are you doing to caution people against betting more than they can afford and to provide problem players with counseling and other types of addiction support?
I'm here on behalf of Director Martino to talk about the loyalty rewards program, so I'm probably not the best person to answer this, but Director Martino can certainly come back and talk to you about it. However, I think it is fair to note that the Lottery and Gaming Control Commission is investigating and looking at and very serious about creating a lottery side program for problem gambling in the same way that it is created as it was required to by the code on the gaming side. This is something that the lottery is looking into on the lottery side as well.
Well, please redouble your efforts because every morning I stop at the Sunoco in Tacoma Park for a Diet Coke. It's a convenience store. And it's really poignant to see a half dozen people sitting around looking at the horse racing TV screen, betting significant amounts of money. And so I appreciate that. I noticed, thank you.
I'll pass that on to the director. And
thank you.
It is something that he's very sensitive to.
He is one of the best. He's a straight shooter, so given my regards, but I think it's an important issue. I notice the contract will cost $13.5 million over the next 3.5 years. I know the money comes from unclaimed prize funds, so this is budget neutral officially. How long will it take for the state to cover its startup costs and begin to achieve a positive return on its investment?
As I think the director would say, if he's here, it's a game of chance, right? We don't know. We expect that we will certainly be positive within, you know, I mean, let's back up a second. These are funds that would have to be given back to the players. So it is going to be given back to the players as soon as the program is up and running. How quickly it earns that money back is, you know, it's hard to tell. The experience has been in other states that it happens quite quickly, that, you know, we expect to be able to generate $10 million in revenue during the 3.5 years. That's the anticipation. But it really depends on how many people sign up and how many people participate.
You know, at the Sunoco, whenever I walk in, I used to say, has anybody won? But it was such a grim response from people that now I say, you're going to win today, and that perks people up. But you understand the situation out there. Thank you.
I do. Thank you. Any further questions?
Do you? I assume you do studies, and it shows that at least in these three states, and I assume the other three are doing similar studies. And it is a net positive for lottery revenue. I must say, I support it also. I also am troubled by that. We support advertising. There's no question advertising is intended to entice people into, mm-hmm. into playing. And the lottery is an important revenue source for the state of Maryland. But the idea of so directly getting people in through, you know, just play a little more and you get a few more points, and it is a little distasteful.
Well, I guess what this program does, though, is it allows people to turn in more tickets. Right now, the way the second chance promotions work, they generally tend to be limited to a limited number of instant tickets. So that a Ravens Cash Fantasy, for example, people send in those tickets. But it's not for every ticket that's out there. This will allow all of the non-winning tickets to be returned, entered into a given points for each of those. So it actually broadens the number of people.
So instead of learning that you probably are not going to win, I mean,
it becomes like the little bottle caps on the Coke, essentially.
I appreciate what the treasurer is saying. We're actually paying or encouraging people. Doesn't matter if you win or lose.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you win, because we're going to give you something for losing. And, you know, most people are savvy enough to see through that, but a lot of folks, you know, they just encourages more unaffordable purchase of tickets. And I just assume you and Mr. Martino have some strategy for dealing with that.
It is a delicate balance, to be sure.
Hey, aren't you essentially saying that by establishing a reward program, saying that it's more likely you're going to win something for each ticket that you buy?
You can accumulate the points to get something.
Right.
Yeah.
So for every purchase you make,
right.
the probability of getting back something is greater.
I think that's fair.
And in some ways, it's not much different than when we see the Powerball or any other jackpot prize going up, and we don't bemoan the fact that it's $200 million today and it'll be $300 million the next day, and as it goes up, we're attracting more and more people, and there are going to be more and more losers, because there's still only going to be one or, you know, a small set that's going to win.
Yeah.
I guess that what I find... Thank you. I don't have
Welcome.
Any other comments.
All right. Thank you.
Anything else on this item or any other item? Great. Anything else on any other item on the DDM calendar? Great. With that, the treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. That's the agenda has been approved in its entirety. Let's go to the USM, University System of Maryland. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Joe Evans representing the University System of Maryland. We have 9 items on the agenda today. Here to answer any questions.
Hearing no comments or questions.
Good job.
Great
Thank
job.
You.
Excellent. The treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. That agenda is approved. The Department of Information Technology does not have an agenda today, so we'll go to the Department of Transportation. Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Daryl Mobley, Acting Secretary for the Department. The Department is presenting 6 items for approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
There's
another good job.
Thank
you.
No questions, no comments, no concerns that are articulated this morning. The comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. MDOT's agenda is approved. Let's go to our final agenda item. Department of General Services. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Al Collins, Secretary of the Department of General Services. The department has 7 items on our agenda, and we'd be glad to answer any questions you have at this time.
Yeah. Okay, here are no comments, questions, and no discussion. The Comptroller moves approval. Second by the Treasurer. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Here are none. The DGS agenda is approved. That concludes this meeting of Board of Public Works. Thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.